Tipps ist eine Produktion des Freien Radio Göppingen e.V. Wir sind zu empfangen im Landkreis Göppingen auf 89.0, im digitalen Kabelnetz und weltweit im Internet unter radiofips.de. Verantwortlich für den Inhalt der einzelnen Sendungen sind die jeweiligen Redakteure und Moderatoren.
Fips und das Radio lebt. Das Schülerradio-Projekt auf Radio Fips.
Erinnern, ehren, versöhnen. Dies ist das Motto der diesjährigen Gedenkveranstaltung zur Ehrung der Mädchen und Frauen, welche unter unmenschlichen Bedingungen Zwangsarbeit in Geislingen verrichten mussten. Anlässlich der Veranstaltung reisten Nachfahren der Überlebenden des KZ Geislingens aus Australien, der USA und Israel an. Die Nachfahren erzählten die Lebensgeschichte ihrer Vorfahren und ermöglichten den Schülerinnen und Schülern der 4 Geislinger Schulen, Fragen zu stellen.
Esther Levin aus Australien teilte mit uns die emotionale Biografie ihrer Familie zu Zeiten des Holocaust auf Englisch.
Fips. Und das Radio lebt.
Hello everybody. Thank you so much for having me here today. Thank you to Michael for opening with beautiful words. It really is an honor. It's an honor to speak to all of you today. So many bright students in the room. While I don't speak German, I'll be speaking in English. Not too difficult to ensure that you can follow along, but you have the translation in just in case. My name is Esther Lewin. I'm from Melbourne, Australia, and I'm the granddaughter of 2 Holocaust survivors. Just last week, I participated in the March of the Living in Poland, which is a program that brings people together to learn about the Holocaust and confront the roots of racism and hatred. We visited extermination camps like Auschwitz and Majdanek, sites that are vast, cold, and impossible to fully comprehend. They were built to systematically murder, eradicate an entire race. This year's program was especially meaningful as it marked the 80th anniversary of the liberation of Jewish prisoners. I know many of you are familiar with Holocaust Memorial Day in January, but there is another day in the Jewish calendar to remember called Yom HaShoah, which happens in April most years, where we remember the 6 million Jews who were murdered during the Holocaust. So on this day, on Yom HaShoah last week, I marched with thousands of people from over 50 countries on the 3 kilometre walk from Auschwitz 1 to Auschwitz 2, which is called Birkenau, and that was called the Death March. And we did it to honour those who perished, including my own relatives. My grandparents on my mother's side were Ruti and Mordechai Gruber. Both of them were Holocaust survivors. So today I'll be telling you Ruti's story. But before I do, let me share a little bit about myself. I was born with the full name Esther Malka Garfield to my parents Sarah and Alan. Today I'm 42 years old, married to my husband Simon, and we have 2 beautiful children, Millie, who is 10, little girl, and a little boy called Noah, who's 9. I grew up in a large city in Melbourne, in the southern part of Australia, as a modern Orthodox Jew. Though we kept certain Jewish laws, I can say that my family was pretty much like any other. We were active in society. Both my parents worked. They also volunteered for community organisations, which were both Jewish and also not Jewish. I played netball and tennis. We went to the snow for holidays, to the mountains to ski at least once a year. Not like you have snow that falls here. We had to travel 3 hours away. And our summers were by the beach, where my grandparents would sometimes come and join us. And I loved to camp with my dad and his friends when I was younger. I loved playing the piano and doing arts and crafts, shopping, reading music, reading girly magazines. Where I might have been a little bit different was because I kept certain Jewish laws strictly. So we ate only kosher food, which is following dietary restrictions. On Saturdays, we never worked to observe our day of rest, which is called the Shabbat. And we also followed other Jewish festivals, which was always celebrated with family and friends. Don't get me wrong, I wasn't perfect. I was rebellious at times. I questioned things. And at times I didn't want to keep anything at all. I always struggled with the concept of God because I couldn't understand how bad things happen to good people. So you could say Myself and religion, it was a rocky relationship. But in general, my life was deeply shaped by our Jewish pride and faith that was passed down by my grandparents on both sides and my parents, and the faith in God that they also had through the years of war, one of the reasons that kept them going and the reason why they survived. Even years later, what my grandparents went to back then affected my life. Though they never really want to speak of that time, of the war, of what they went through, there were hints of it. We cooked Romanian and Hungarian food. They didn't like me wasting my food. Like Simon, they made me eat everything off my plate. They would sing tunes on Shabbat and on the Jewish festivals that they told me came from when they were young, back in their own towns, back in Romania. I was very close with my grandfather Mordechai, who I called Zeda, which is Yiddish for grandfather. He was a very energetic, charismatic man. He was a very funny man too. I was very close with him, but I had a very difficult relationship with my grandmother Ruti, who was more quiet. She was deaf in both ears and was always sick with mental illness and physical sickness, and was always in and out of hospital. And I was always told growing up that it was a result of what happened during the war. We never knew any of the details. Nobody spoke of it. Though she lived near us, she often withdrew. She became distant, sometimes didn't join family celebrations. And as a child, I didn't understand this. I was 9 years old when I first learned about what the Holocaust was. My parents explained that Ruti's parents, Moshe Yaakov and Sara Leah Mendelovich, and her five brothers and sisters, Chaim Hirsch, Avram Leib, and his wife Leah, Chana Feger, and her husband Froim, and her brother Kalman, were murdered by the Nazis. Some of them in the gas chambers, their bodies burnt in the crematoriums, some from sickness and some from starvation. Only Ruti, her brother Dov, and his wife and son, and she had two sisters, Ella and Gittel, they survived. As I grew older, I could see that Ruti held on to enormous pain and guilt. I had so many questions, but she wouldn't speak about it because the pain was too deep, and we continued life knowing very little about her life. But that all changed in 2020. We had very severe lockdowns in Melbourne. We couldn't leave the house, and I'm sure many of you went through that as well. I was homeschooling my two children. I was working online on Zoom, and I felt an urgency, almost apocalyptic. I began to build a family tree for my mother's side of the family, and while searching all those databases online, I found something incredible, something I didn't know existed. Two recorded testimonies, which my grandparents did, Ruti and Mordechai, from 2014. They had opened up on camera about their lives, and I never knew about it. What they revealed was enlightening. It was heartbreaking, and at times also very confusing. There were many gaps in their stories. It was very broken. So I decided to begin a bit of research, filling in the gaps. And their stories, I found, were just too incredible to remain buried in a database. So that's when I decided to write a book, and I finished it, and I'm hoping to publish it later this year. So you're probably asking, why did I come from Poland all the way here to Geislingen today? Well, this is what I discovered in the research, a forgotten chapter of Ruti's life that unfolded here. But let me first take you back to the beginning so you can understand a bit more about Ruti and the life that she came from. Her life sounded like any other Jewish child growing up in Europe. She was born in 1931 in a small town called Sighet in northern Romania, in the northern part of Transylvania. It was the same town where the famous Holocaust survivor Elie Wiesel was from, and I'm sure many of you who read his books, him and Ruti's family, they were good friends. Ruti's family traditionally was quite observant with Jewish laws, like I grew up. Her father, Moshe Yaakov Mendelovich, he was a well-known musician and he played in a band, and both he and his wife managed an orchestra. The Mendelovich family was very busy. Ruti was the youngest of nine children. She was especially close with her brother and Ella, and the others, as the others were doing their own thing, they were much older. She walked or rode her bike to government school every day, helped care for the animals behind her home in the farm that they had, and often played with Jewish and non-Jewish friends. Religious life and the dream of moving to the land of Israel one day was very central to that family. Her mother taught her how to sew and paint and knit, while her father taught her how to play the piano. Despite Hitler becoming Chancellor of Germany in 1933 and the war breaking out in 1939, Rutti's town in Siget remained relatively untouched. It was pretty quiet. But that changed in 1940 when the town was annexed by Hungary, aligning with the Nazis. Anti-Semitic violence grew and there were massacres around the country. But Rutti, being young, she didn't remember most of it personally, but she did remember 1943. And that was when the restrictions on the Jews and the hatred for Jews began to rise. Her non-Jewish friends started to pull away and ignore her, and soon she was expelled from her school. It was no longer safe to wander the streets anymore or play outside. In 1944, things drastically worsened. There were massacres and pogroms happening all over the country where Jews were brutally murdered in mass. In her town, as her family was preparing for the Jewish festival Passover, new laws forced Jews to close synagogues, to close their shops and stay inside the house. Then on the seventh day of Passover, Hungarian Nazis arrived in Siget. They pounded on the door of her home and forced the family onto the streets, telling them that they could only take one suitcase each, and then they were forced into the Siget ghetto. The Siget ghetto was a few fenced-in streets. It was overcrowded with little food, and they lived there for a few weeks. They did nothing but roam all day. They sat there confused, roaming around, trying to figure out what was happening to them. Rutti was just 13 years old in that ghetto. Rutti turned 13 years old in the ghetto. There was no celebration for her birthday. Soon, Hungarian gendarmes, they stormed the ghetto. With chaos, beatings and gunfire, they marched the families to the train station. Rutti's grandmother, who was frail and 83 years old, refused to board the train, and the Hungarians didn't hesitate to argue with her. They shot her in the head right in front of her family. With no time to mourn and the family devastated, they had no choice but to board the cattle cars. They didn't know where they were being taken. The train ride was hell. There was no space to sit or lie down. There was a bucket as the toilet in the corner of the room, which was for everybody. No windows, no food, no water, and many did die. Rumours swirled in the cart about a death camp and a work camp for those who were young and healthy, and they would likely be chosen. For Rutti, though, she was 13 years old. She might have been fit and young, but she was the wrong kind of fit and young. So there, a decision was made for her by her parents. She took the identity, the name and the birth date of a 16-year-old girl who was unfortunately dead in the corner of the cart. That decision saved her life. When the train stopped, they had arrived at Auschwitz, and chaos arose. Families were torn apart. Dr. Joseph Mengele stood at the selection line, deciding who would live and die, who was healthy, who was not, who was fit for work, who was not. Rutti's sisters were sent one way to the camp, but Rutti stayed with her mother. She was clutching to her mother, and they were sent another way. They made it to a line, and they shuffled ahead in this line, which was headed for the gas chambers, until an SS guard started shouting at Rutti, "You, move away, go to the camp." Confused and too afraid to leave her mother, she didn't move. She was shouted at again, "Move." And this time she obeyed. That moment, she was torn from her mother's side, and that day haunted her forever. She never recovered from that day. She later recalled one word, Hashem, God. What did that mean? Why did she mention Hashem when she saw her mother go to the gas chambers and she was chosen for life? She found her sisters briefly in the camp. Together, the five of them had their heads shaved, and they were deloused with some spray and given rags to wear and used shoes. At that moment, she was separated from her sisters because she was young, and she was led to a block where all the young people slept. There in the cold, overcrowded barracks, she found herself among strangers, all speaking different languages. Can you imagine all these people from different parts of the world trying to make sense of their situation, speaking different languages? So she tried to look for the people who spoke Hungarian and Yiddish. They explained to her that some of them had been at the camp for many weeks, and they gave her the rules of how to survive. Stay clean, stay alert, and obey. Do what you're told. Every day brought roll calls, selections, and fear. They were given barely any food. And so over the week, she grew weaker, more skinny. Her throat scratched and was raw from swallowing the small amounts of dry bread. But worse than hunger was fear. One day she was selected. This time she was told that she would be taken for a shower. It was a euphemism for the gas chambers. Somehow, as she stood in that line about to undress, she ran away. She was small, she escaped. From this recording that she did in 2014, this was the first time that any of our family were hearing about this. Before this, we all thought that Ruti went to Auschwitz and she stayed in Auschwitz until it was liquidated in January 1945. But then, in this recording, she mentioned the word Geislingen. And there she started to explain in a broken way what happened to her in July 1944. Another selection. Yet this time she was selected with 700 Hungarian women that were transferred on a train to Geislingen, and that's why I'm here today. When Ruti arrived at Geislingen, they saw quickly that the conditions were very different to Auschwitz. Each woman, they were surprised. They had their own bed in a bunk tower. Each were given a towel, a blanket, some soap, their own cup. The kapos were all females. The guards were all females. They came to the block and they were told that they were now about to be taken for a shower. And naturally, Ruti froze. She knew what the word shower meant and she refused to go. She was terrified. It was another lie. She had been there before, and this time she just stayed where she was as all the women went out. A kapo named Pauli, sensing her fear, was kind to her, gave her a bath instead. Ruti said she was one of the youngest, and Pauli showed her a rare kindness that she remembered forever. Given a striped dress then, with no undergarments and a pair of wooden clogs for their feet, the women were told that there was work at the WMF factory producing gun parts for the Reich. Conditions were still brutal, but they thought it was better than Auschwitz. Factory shifts were relentless, 12-hour days, day or night. Some women did day and night. They marched through the streets every day from the camp to the factory. She remembers that sometimes German residents felt bad for them, so they would throw them a scrap of food from the window, but they never picked it up. They were too scared. Hunger set in quickly as the war went on. One day, Ruti found a scrap of food and she was caught. The kapo dragged her outside in the snow and made her stand in the courtyard. "How old are you?" he asked. She said, she was 13 at the time, but she said, "I'm 16, which was her new age. And he said, "Well," she said, "well, you will get 16 of these." And she started to strike Ruti with the butt of her gun, 16 times, blows to her head. Ruti collapsed, her ears became infected, and she lost her hearing permanently. Despite this, how did she survive? With such conditions, the women saw themselves as a sisterhood. They had a beautiful friendship amongst each other. They looked out for each other, sharing scraps of food, huddling together in warmth. Ruti used to call them, her friends, we were Lagerschwesters, so we were camp sisters. And Ruti still believed in God. She believed that God kept her alive for a reason and that she had to keep going to survive. So for Ruti, faith, friendship and hope kept her going. In March 1945, Allied bombings damaged transport to the WMF factory, and the factory didn't have supplies coming in. So with no work, Geislingen was liquidated in April, and the women were sent to Allach, a women's subcamp of Dachau concentration camp. From there, they were forced onto trains, again, by Himmler's orders. There were a group of them who were selected to work on fortifications and be used as human shields in the mountains in a town called Tyrol. But with the war coming to an end, the women were on the train along with some men from Dachau, and the train circled aimlessly. There was nowhere to go for days, back and forth, not stopping, no food, nor water. They weren't allowed out until April 30th when the train stopped and Ruti and the others on the train were liberated by the Americans. After weeks in displaced persons camp, Ruti reunited with her sister Ella at Bergen-Belsen. They went back home to Sighet, hoping to find their family. Their home had been taken over by Romanians. They weren't allowed to take it back. Eventually, they found their brother Dov and their sister Gittel, finding out weeks later that the rest of the family had been murdered. Ruti didn't want to stay in Romania. She was just 14 years old, so her sisters were a little bit older, and they wanted to stay in Romania to get married. So for nearly 2 years, she went from one DP camp to another until arriving in Israel in 1947 by boat. She was 16 years old. She lived in a pioneer home in Haifa, which is a city in northern Israel, and she learnt new skills like reading and writing in Hebrew. She made new friends and built a new life. She then met my grandfather, Mordechai, another survivor, and they married in 1941, and they had my mother, Sarah, in 1953 in Haifa. Ruti never truly healed. The trauma of what she saw, heard, felt, losing everything, all of it, it haunted her forever. She spent time in mental institutions, and eventually in 1960, to get better treatment for her mental state, her physical state, and to fix her ears, the family moved to Australia where her brother was. There, they had a very strong Jewish community. They built a new home, but the scars never left her. Growing up with her, I adored her, but I never fully understood her. Today, after all the research and writing my book, I do understand a little bit more. In fact, I know much more, not just from the research, but I learned a lot from her without her even telling her story. She had a special bond with her mother, Sarah Leah, and named her daughter, my mother, after her. I know how much Ruti loved playing the piano back when she was home. It was the first thing she bought when she moved to Australia. And it reminded her of her father, who used to teach her how to play. She would make food dishes with us, like Hungarian goulash, challah, which is kosher Jewish bread that we have for Shabbat. And it was the same ones that her mother made for her when she was young. It was a way that she would keep her mother's memory alive. My grandparents' house was also adorned with all Jewish things, paintings and photographs of Israel. It was very easy to see that they loved the home that they came from. Ruti loved to be involved in the community. She would volunteer at Montefiore Homes, which was an old age home in Melbourne, and she would visit and keep Holocaust survivors company, survivors who didn't have any family, and she'd play cards with them and board games. Montefiore Homes was also the place that she reunited with Elie Wiesel. He came to Melbourne many years later. She saw him at Montefiore Homes. He came to visit the Holocaust survivors, and she went up to him. She said, "Elie, do you remember me?" And he started to cry. He was good friends with the family, but closer friends with Ruti's two older brothers. He said to her, "Ruti, in Auschwitz, I looked for you. I looked for your family. I tried to look for your brothers, but I couldn't find them. I cannot believe you survived." I found myself studying photographs of Ruti and Mordechai travelling overseas, where they went to visit her sister in Ella, who remained in Romania, and they'd go to Israel to visit Mordechai's family, who all lived in Israel, and Gittel, her sister, she lived in Israel too. I could see from the photos the places that they visited and the time they spent together was very important to them, and how important family was, and how much time she spent missing them living so far away. Ruti's story lives in me and my children. Her trauma was definitely passed down to me through the generations. I think about it often. I would think about it often. But also, she wasn't just a victim. I don't like to see her as a victim. She never saw herself as a victim. She saw herself as a survivor. She had such strength. And many times when I found myself in challenging situations, I'd say, "What would Ruti do? How would she overcome this? How can I overcome this?" Asking that question made me realise that I inherited her strength and faith to overcome anything difficult. Ruti and Mordechai lived an incredible life. They had hardships, loss and sorrow, but their strength to overcome what they did. They built a beautiful life and they treasured being Jewish. They were proud of being Jewish. I have a lot to thank them for, and I am who I am today because of them. I look at all of you in front of me. Next generation. Some of you, I doubt any of you are my generation, probably the next generation. I see a beautiful sight, seeing strong students with an eagerness to learn everything about the world. Know that your school years aren't just about gaining knowledge, developing skills, and learning how to think critically, and also working with others. This is the time when you develop an understanding of yourself. This is a time where you get yourself ready to contribute meaningfully to society, your community, and the world. Though that dark times in our history was 80 years ago, it actually wasn't that long ago. And today we know the world isn't perfect. But if you learn from Ruti's story, we can be courageous, resilient and hopeful as you look for ways to shape your future. In her memory, let us be the generation that says no to hatred and to racism and division, and instead choose love, compassion, tolerance and understanding. We can be the voice for those who didn't have one. The world is waiting for us to take action. Don't be a bystander. Let us rise to the challenge and ensure that never again truly means never again. Thank you.
Wir bedanken uns bei Esther Levin und allen anderen Nachfahren der überlebenden Mädchen und Frauen des Geislinger KZs, welche uns diesen einmaligen Einblick ermöglicht haben. Esther Levin erzählt in ihrer berührenden Rede die Geschichte ihrer jüdischen Großmutter Ruti zu Zeiten des Nationalsozialismus und welche Auswirkungen diese immer noch auf sie und ihre Familie hat.
Und damit verabschieden wir uns von euch und freuen uns auf das nächste Mal.